WSLR, LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPV, LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ed James III with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, May 21st. Manatee County could be moving forward with a plan to hold a referendum this fall, asking voters whether they are willing to pay a tax to protect more local land from development. As an existing fund is running out of money after land purchases, at least two county commissioners, according to the Bradenton Herald, are encouraging the Trust for Public Land to survey voters whether they are willing to pay a new tax for more land purchases. In other county news, the Manatee County Commission has allocated $100,000 to restore and repair the Old Memphis Cemetery. The historical black gravesite was recently defaced and desecrated. While the immediate funding for restoration has been approved, county leaders continue to debate long-range maintenance plans for the property. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Rays have cleared their first major hurdle in securing public funding for a new baseball stadium. The Hillsborough County Commission has approved the financing plan, moving the stadium project forward. In state education, a new scorecard report shows that Florida students currently rank last in the nation for reading scores. This comes as school districts across the state navigate changing academic performance metrics. Finally, local election officials are seeing a shifting trend in voter participation. After the state legislature passed a law that restricts vote by mail, mail-in ballot requests are significantly down across the Tampa Bay area ahead of the upcoming midterm elections compared to previous cycles. This has been Ed James III with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, May 21st.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views, opinions of hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR are their own and don't necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WSLR staff, administration, or volunteers. With me today is Megan. Megan, say your last name for me.
It's Tinneman.
Tinneman. Megan Tinneman. Megan is running for school board. Which district?
I'm running for seat four.
Seat four, which is currently occupied by?
It's currently occupied by Robin Marinelli.
Okay. So Robin Marinelli, she has not announced.
She has not. However, she has until June 12th to do so.
Okay. So Robin is the incumbent, but you do have competition with Frank DiCicco.
I do. Yes.
Okay. And Frank, I will be getting in touch. You know, I'd love to have Frank on too. Megan, tell us about yourself. How long have you lived in Sarasota? Given the climate of contention and school board issues, why are you running? Why do you want to serve? And your professional background?
Sure. So I'm actually a native Sarasotan, and I went to school here. I graduated from University of South Florida, the Manatee Camp, Sarasota Manatee Campus.
Oh, wow.
And then I started teaching at Goshio Elementary, which mm-hmm. is a local Title I school here in Sarasota. I taught there for a while, and then after I had my kids, I stayed home with them and worked for my husband's payroll company mm-hmm. from home. So it was kind of the best of both worlds. I got to be there for my kids and also help my husband grow his business. Mm-hmm. And as his business grew, he needed me less and the kids needed me more and more. So I kind of morphed into the volunteer role at my kids' schools. All mm-hmm. three of them went to Fruitville Elementary. I was super, super active there in the PTO as a reading volunteer, classroom volunteer. I was president of the PTO for many, many years and just absolutely loved how that got me involved with relationships with teachers and really seeing how volunteer efforts can help a school.
Okay, so where is Fruitvale Elementary? It's east, right?
Yeah, it's right off of Honoray.
Okay.
So, and it's actually one of the oldest, after Southside, one of the older elementary schools here in Sarasota.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're volunteering. So I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Yeah,
you're telling me about what you've been doing in schools.
Yes. And because I have had the really unique opportunity to be really inside the schools, mm-hmm. I've developed really great relationships with teachers. And they feel safe coming to me and just kind of chatting about their frustrations, their worries. And that really prompted me to start paying more attention to our school board.
Yeah.
And by following the meetings and following the policies that were being set. And when I finally decided I wanted to pursue this was when our school board voted against the majority of what our community wanted to move our school board meetings from 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. to 10 a.m. because who can attend a 10 a.m. meeting?
Yeah.
A teacher? No. A student? No. Or a working parent? No.
It's set up for the convenience of the administration.
Absolutely.
And perhaps the motive was to curtail public input.
Absolutely, because our community is starting to speak up and make their requests and opinions well known, and our school board meetings are typically very well attended.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been paying attention to the school board? Because you said you started attending meetings. I'm curious, when did that start?
So I actually started really watching them from home in 2020 when we had
the masking.
And because I really wanted to educate myself on both sides mm-hmm. of the equation and mm-hmm. see what I thought was best for my family. And I, at the end of the day, gave my kids the choice if they wanted to go remote or if they wanted to stay at home. I'm sorry, if they wanted to go to school and wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And they all three chose to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And I like that we had that option.
Yeah. Yeah. How old are they?
So three kids. I have a daughter who's 17, a son who is 15, and a son who is 13.
Ah,
okay. All teens.
So I was going to say, you're like, you're in the trenches, you know, these teen years that in some ways I think they need you more.
Yes.
During those years, those are pretty critical years for young developing men and women. You know, they're coming into their own and they do need their parents quite a bit. So what was it? You know, quite honestly, there's a way that we desperately need good people to run for school board. And at the same time, given what's gone on, I can totally understand why good people would say, yeah, I don't want to bother. So obviously, you're someone who's decided that you want to contribute. Given the climate, why did you decide to take it on?
That's such a great question, because when I was asked by some friends of mine who run a advocacy group called Support Our Schools to run, my immediate answer was no. Really, because I followed along very closely the school board elections in 2022 and 2024, and the hate that was spewed to many of the candidates really had me questioning whether or not I wanted to put my family through this.
Yeah.
So we met as a family. My husband was very, very, still very supportive. My kids, I don't think my boys quite understood what it all entailed, but my daughter is my number one fan. And I really think that's indicative of the youth that we have right now in Sarasota County Schools. So many of them come to the school board meetings and speak up and support their friends. And they're so intelligent and they're so well-spoken. And that's the culture that I'm trying to cultivate, is that everybody's welcome. Everybody can share, and we're going to do this together as a team.
Yeah. You know, historically speaking, in the United States, school board issues have been politicized historically, right? Whether it came to desegregation or the Scopes trial, you know, evolution versus creationism. I think I know I've forgotten because I thought we were past that, right?
Right.
And so there is a way that school boards and school environments, public schools, have been a kind of theater for public policy and cultural beliefs, scientific beliefs, religious beliefs in the United States. So like I said, I thought we were past that.
Right.
But obviously we're not, right? And so I'm curious to get your take. It's been concerning for a lot of people to see our school board meetings become political theater. I mean, don't get me wrong, a certain element of that is just life, and I think it's healthy, and we want public participation. But when school board issues are showing up on national news, and it appears it's been orchestrated. I can remember, you know, a particular parent, and then like that night or the next night, they were on a school board member, and the parent, it was a Moms for Liberty leader, who you don't see her anymore. She's like nowhere to be seen. What's your take on that? I mean, what kind of, if you're going to welcome everyone and there is this history, I mean, you've got to expect there's going to be some of that. But, you know, what's your take on what's happened in the past 5-6 years with school board issues? What kind of culture are you looking to instill or create?
You're absolutely right. Over the past several years, it has become political theater in our school board. Mm. And I do want our listeners to know I am not a politician. I'm not using this as a stepping stone to further a political career. I'm a community member. I'm a former teacher. And I'm a mom of Sarasota County Kids School, Sarasota School Kids. Mm-hmm. And I want everybody, all kids, every day to be welcomed, have a great academic career, and be safe while doing it. And that really, the decorum of your school board meetings is going to be set by the chair. And when you have a chair who listens and responds appropriately and decently, it's amazing what the rest of the school board members will do to follow. And just the tone of the overall meeting. If you go back a few years and watch some of the older videos of meetings, the chairs would be very, very interactive with the speakers. And they would make sure if a speaker had a question or a concern that they would have somebody follow them out, get their information, and really make sure that that speaker who took their time to come and share their thoughts, had their questions or concerns answered in a very positive way.
Yeah.
Very positive.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned you started paying attention in 2020. And how many years did you teach again?
I taught 5 years.
5 years. What were you teaching?
Second grade.
Oh.
Yes.
Such a sweet time.
Oh, I love that age because they can do a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing what they can do, but they still love coming to school and they're little sponges. And where I taught was a Title I, but also we had many English as second language speakers. And I could get students coming who didn't speak any English. And within 3 weeks, they're having conversations with their friends. And it was beautiful to witness.
They can learn so much.
So much.
So quickly. Mm-hmm. Okay. So your kids were, correct me if I'm wrong, they were 7, 9, and 11.
Yes.
In 2020 when all this stuff, you started paying attention and all. And, you know, in the ensuing years, you've been involved. And what were your kids coming home and saying? Because you had elementary through middle school and then middle through high school. So your kids have really been in the trenches with you in terms of being in school during this really different time. So what were you hearing from them? And how do you hold that with them?
You know, it's interesting because regardless of what side you were on, whether you wanted to mask or not mask, I think we all wanted our kids to be able to access education. And so, like I said, I gave my kids the option. They all chose to wear a mask and go to school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as they were coming home, so I had a second grader, a fifth grader, and a sixth grader. Okay. It was a very anxious time for my daughter. She was starting middle school, brand new school. Everybody wore a mask, so you couldn't really identify people's features. But I feel like she went to SSAS, and they did such a great job with making sure those kids were comfortable because they knew this was a challenge.
Yeah.
And I was just chatting with my son's second grade teacher yesterday about something that was brought up at the school board meeting yesterday was the lanyard, or sorry, it was Tuesday, the lanyard that students wore that said they were exempt from a mask. And I asked her if she had seen that. She said, yeah, I saw a few, but how were we supposed to know who had an exemption? We had to have a system. And then she said something that I thought was really, really important was nobody knew. We were learning as we went. And that stuck with me because none of us knew. And we really were just learning. My concern for my second grader was he was still a speech language kid at that point. But I was very confident after speaking with the therapist that they had all the protocols in place for him to safely take his mask off, receive his speech and language services in a small environment. They had all the safety procedures in place. And so I was very comfortable with my kids being at school. Yeah. None of them came back and said anything negative about masking. They didn't say anything negative about anybody not masking.
Yeah. I appreciate the masking issue, but I'm curious also about kind of the whole enchilada. You know, because there's a lot of stuff like the book banning, or, you know, they'll say not book banning, but Sarasota County had a policy in place with if a parent objected to a book, they always had a say over what their kids could take out of the library. And that was politicized to the point where teachers felt constrained. So, I mean, I appreciate that COVID discussion. Yeah. But I'm also thinking about more than that.
Absolutely.
So was there anything else that they, because it sounds like you were, and your daughter makes a great point, nobody knew at the beginning what was going to happen.
Right.
Right, with COVID, when we didn't even know the nature of the disease. And it's funny because I used to keep the Little League book, like the score book, when my son was playing baseball. And it was so obvious. You'd see these fights happen. And was that a pass ball? Or, you know, I'd sit next to the mom of the pitcher and she'd call it a pass ball instead of a, you know, a wild pitch. So, but it was the parents and the adults that were making the anxiety level go up, you know, in that game situation. That's what I saw with COVID. You saw, and all these issues. It was the theatrics, the anxiety, and the combativeness or the provocative nature of the parents, but the school board, you know?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm a soccer mom, so I totally get the parent thing.
I mean, yeah, you see
parents
it,
make
right?
it way worse, 100%. And, yeah, I have an experience of – it's not book banning. We can't call it book banning, but we know that the material in our schools – has already been combed through by media specialists and marked whether it's certified or not. Mm. And when my youngest was in third grade, his teacher wanted to read to the class a book called Save Me a Seat. It's a lovely book about inclusion. One of the parents didn't want that book read. Mm. So typically the policy is the child will receive a different title and the rest of the class will read. But it was made such a big deal that the class could not read that book. So one parent's decision determined whether or not that class could read the book.
Have you looked at that book?
I'd already read it.
Oh, yes. Because your son wanted to. Okay. So was there anything in there that you could say, oh, or, you know, I understand your point on this, or do you think it was just kind of a fringe view?
I honestly think it was a fringe view because, like I said, my older two had already read the book, and it's about a boy who has a speech impediment who befriends a boy from India, and they realize that their differences actually make them alike. Uh-huh. And both of them are bullied for different reasons, and they come together. And like I said, it's a lovely story about celebrating our differences and finding common ground on how we all get along.
Okay. Yeah. And that's what I'm getting at, because, you know, I think you and I have, you're in a situation, the last thing that kids need are parents, really leadership, school board leadership, that is potentiating conflict, that's actually stoking conflict. And from where I sit, that's what we've had. So
I totally agree. And I say it's with leadership, it's a trickle down effect. If the leaders of your school are acting in a certain way, that gives students, parents, the right to act a certain way as well, because it becomes accepted practice.
Yeah.
And my volunteer coordinator gave me the term, which I love. She said, decency, no drama. Because our school board meetings should not be a stage for personal opinion or personal views. School board members are elected by the community to represent and make policy based on what the community is asking for.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know if Robin Marinelli is going to file. And your opponent right now is Frank DiCicco. But if she were to file, how would you distinguish yourself from Ms. Marinelli and likewise Mr. DiCicco?
Well, I think I have a very unique lens because I have the teaching experience, the business experience, plus the wonderful background of how many teachers I have volunteered with and become very close to. I've also started working on marketing for our middle schools, because if you look at the data in our district, we lose our students mostly at the middle school level. And I can probably tell you that's anxiety, because I went through it with my daughter. That's the reason we chose SSAS, because when we walked into our district middle school.
And you should, SSAS.
It's Sarasota School of Arts and Sciences.
And that is a charter school.
It is.
And it's not a corporate charter school.
It is a district public funded charter school.
So it was started by parents and teachers in the community, which is very different in my view from like an Academica or
100%
school.
Okay. Because our district funded charter schools cannot take the voucher. They are in all essence a public school.
They are a public school. Okay. So
yes.
Go ahead. So tell me.
So, like I said, we walked into our district public school and she shut down. It was too big. There were too many people. And so I thought, well, you know, gosh, we're going to be wearing masks. She's already got anxiety. Let's see if we can find something else. So as a parent, I was so appreciative that we had options, which is why I tell parents, we are a district of choice. You don't have to leave the district to find the right fit for your child. Our middle schools, our high schools, our elementary schools, we have so many diverse programs for all types of learners. And I'm not just saying for academics, sports, music, the arts, theater, engineering. We have it all.
Yeah.
So I'm really working to make some short videos just highlighting certain things that make each middle school unique and why a parent should explore staying in our district for middle school.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because test scores in Florida, they're near the top of the nation for reading in elementary school, reading and math. But then they tank. They really slide by the time 10th grade rolls around. It's the lowest, it's the biggest drop in the country, among the biggest drops. I mean, Billy Townsend's done some real great work on this, documenting how Florida schools have a real problem when it comes to achievement scores in an elementary school versus 10th grade. And I think, you know, one of the things Townsend points to is the drift to charter schools or online options, private schools that may or may not have the kind of standards that are required in public schools. And then by high school, a lot of parents make the decision. And there's lots of reasons to have your kids go back to public schools in high school. It might be sports. It might be the programs that are offered. But what often winds up happening is that they've actually lost a lot of academic ground. Are, you know, what is your experience with your kids? And have you, you know, their friends that may have left? Do you think there's any validity to that?
Absolutely. It's important to note that our public schools have policies and procedures that are, it's probably 400 pages of what they are required to do, how they are required to give services, how they are required to follow curriculum, and charter schools and private schools really don't.
The corporate.
Yes.
The corporate charter
schools. The corporate,
schools,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Go yes. Ahead. And and also it's important to note that private schools and corporate charter schools do not have to accept students with IEPs or behavioral issues, but our public schools do, and they cannot ask them to leave. Mm-hmm. So, of course, data is going to skew when you can control your enrollment and who can attend your school.
Yeah, if you cherry pick your kids.
Yes.
Right?
And also, yeah. This is kind of where I go back to basics. I have a middle schooler right now, and I just randomly asked him the other day, how many screen programs do you use? And he probably listed 7.
In school.
Okay. So technology has its place, absolutely has its place, and kids need to learn how to access, you know, Excel spreadsheets and documents and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But major data is coming out right now showing these instructional screen programs are not closing a reading gap. They are not providing any math instruction. What they are doing is taking away valuable classroom time. And also data shows kids learn better face-to-face. And when they're manipulating yeah. materials and using pencil paper,
yeah.
a screen is not going to replace a teacher, and it's not going to replace engagement with your peers. And just,
yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, when I write something down, just personally, if I write something down on a to-do list, if I go back to it, even if I haven't, like, referred to it, that thing gets done because I think there's a way that you're engaging your being, something in your brain. It's different when you're writing something on a piece of paper. And the screen aspect, there's a disconnect, or maybe there's the better way to say it, there's a connection that isn't happening, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's a great tool. But what do you think the proper role is? I mean, if your son's got 7 screen apps, have you given much thought? I know one of your priorities you talked about was back to basics. What do you mean by that in terms of screen time in classroom?
Pencil, paper, manipulatives, more people working with our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, we've got budget issues, but we also spend – I don't even know how much on these instructional programs. If we yeah. don't have them because they're not useful, I'd be interested in seeing if we could provide more personnel, teachers, to work with our students.
Mm-hmm.
And just even giving kids more time to go back and, like you said, commit things to memory via writing. I tell my own kids when they are studying for a test, write it down. Do the old school flashcard.
Yeah.
Write it on
yeah.
the index card because yeah. the act of writing is how you commit it to
yeah,
your memory.
Take notes. Take mm-hmm. notes in class. And somehow I don't know that typing them is the same thing. You know, I don't know that typing is the same in terms of getting it into your brain the way writing is. So you have you've listed priorities on your website for what you want to achieve. Academic excellence and accountability, teacher support and stability is number 2, and then trust, transparency, and community respect. Let's start with that one. How do you think, let's say, transparency could be improved based on what you've seen?
Well, it always seems like the policies that are being presented at the school board meetings are for somebody's political gain. And I just want policies and discussion at school board meetings that pertain to academics, to the mental being, well-being of our teachers and our students. And also, communication is always what parents want. And I think as a district, we struggle with the right way to get to every single parent.
Yeah.
Because not every parent is going to check an email. Sometimes the text message or the phone call doesn't get answered. So more community engagement, I'm already talking to a lot of parents saying, you don't have to give your entire life to the school, but can you go in for an hour? Can you do something from home? The more we all take a stake in our kids' education, the more transparent education becomes. And I think that's also where this theory of indoctrination comes in as well. Of course, we want our kids to not have any political views forced down their throats while they're at school. It's inappropriate. But if you're in school just for a little bit and you see what kids are learning and how they're doing it, I mean, if we indoctrinated kids, they'd all be doing their homework, you know?
So it sounds to me like what you're saying is, because I can relate to that. I was a working mom with two kids, and it was a lot. So if someone had said to me, hey, here's an opportunity to volunteer for an hour, that would have felt far more doable. I didn't go to the PTO meetings. I was pretty, you know, I had work I had to do at night. I was hosting dinners and stuff like that. So it just felt like, gosh, I don't think I have enough bandwidth. Is there an opening for that kind of communication? Because, like I said, if I had seen, oh, I could do this for an hour in the classroom, I think it would have changed things.
So when I was the PTO president, I had a wonderful co-president, and we realized we were doing a disservice to our parents who had full-time jobs, sometimes two jobs. Mm-hmm. So we offered our PTO meetings on Zoom. And we said, nobody is responsible for doing anything. We just want you to come to the Zoom meeting. Mm-hmm. That way you can know what's going on in the school and you can comment. And it's an hour out of your time, but you can do it while you're eating dinner, while you're at home, you know, also doing work. We also made it a point to approach people and say, we don't want you to run the fall festival, but could you volunteer for a shift at the book fair? Or could you come in and help? This teacher is doing World History Day. Could you come in and assist her? So we really tried to break it down into chunks of, of actual meaningful and doable pieces for our parents. And that's where that community PTA comes in, because especially for our Title I schools, when those parents and guardians put their effort into doing something, sometimes the return on their time is not worth it financially. They may make $600 and they might be very, very discouraged, thinking, well, that just wasn't worth my time. So what the community PTA allows us to do is pull in all of our schools together and do community fundraising and do community outreach about programs that are offered to families, and really just unites us all together and allows us to share what, you know, some schools have a lot of money that their PTOs bring in, some schools don't. So it really kind of levels the playing field and also gives us access to a state PTA, which allows scholarships and grants. And they partner with art programs such as symphonies to allow students to attend these for little to no cost. And also gives us advocates who go to Tallahassee and advocate on our behalf. So it's really an important, important role for a community to have something like this.
So it sounds like, I mean, is that something you could, if you were on the school board, is that something you could kind of bring out you know, to the entire district?
Absolutely, because like I was just saying, people don't know what they don't know, right? Yeah. And so as a school board member, I can bring up in an agenda and talk with the superintendent about empowering our families to start a PTA at their school to give them access and unity.
So are you saying a lot of schools don't have a PTA?
So most of them are PTOs. And I know, I didn't know what the difference was either. I thought they were the same. PTO doesn't really have a governing body. You're kind of your own entity. You report to the state. You have a federal ID.
I didn't know that.
However, PTA, you are under Florida and national PTA.
Oh, okay.
Very concrete bylaws. You have dues, but you can set the dues to whatever you want. They could be
that
a dollar.
That's so interesting.
Right?
Because when I came here, I was like, what's this PTO thing? How come it's not PTA? And I just thought, oh, it's a Florida. You know, so it's different. But I didn't realize that the PTA and is a national entity.
It is. And PTO kind of is the offshoot where people wanted a PTA with less governance. But governance gives you access.
Well,
you know.
Governance, I mean, you know, flexibility is great, but having some standards, you don't know you need them until you do, and it's usually because there's been some kind of problem.
Or right? embezzlements, like we saw with, you know, Little League, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Embezzlement yes. at the PTA or the PTO. Wow.
Which I never saw, but
it happened, right?
The guidelines are there to prevent that.
Well, and so if it's been there, like I said, it's probably happened. Okay. How do you think teachers need to be supported? You say you want teacher support and stability. So what have you heard? You've talked to a lot of teachers. You've been a teacher.
Yes.
What have you heard about what they need and what kind of change they'd like?
So number one, they are overworked. And with the reduction of staff, more is being piled on their plates. But they really just feel if they speak up, then they have a target on their back. For example, I've seen this happen before. Let's say you're a second grade teacher and you bring something up to administration and they don't really like it, and you become a little bit more vocal about it. Well, next year you're teaching fifth grade because you spoke up. And
so wait a minute. So you're what grade were they teaching before?
Second. So
Is that like a deliberate, I'm going to mess with you?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes. And I didn't think it was a thing at first until many teachers said, oh, yeah, that's what happens. If you make a noise, then you are a low man on the totem pole again. So
wait a minute. Is like fifth grade, so explain to me, because is fifth grade like the harder?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
It's just when you're a teacher, you invest so much time and your own resources, in your grade,
okay.
Whether it's books for your classroom, teaching supplements, and to have to move without wanting to is a lot. You're basically starting all over.
And this is such a disservice to the kids.
Yes.
So you're taking somebody who has an expertise in a particular grade with a particular curriculum, and because they spoke up, you're shifting them to a different, to get them to shut up?
Yep. They call it not staying in your lane. That's what a lot of my teacher friends have told me.
Wow.
And
so this you've heard from multiple
several teachers. Yes.
Oh.
I know.
Okay. I mean, that's pretty awful.
Yeah.
That's really awful.
And teachers feel like if they speak up, then something bad will happen.
Yeah.
I want more teachers to be a part of our school board meetings. So obviously they need to be at an accessible time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a teacher. So piling one more thing on your plate sometimes seems very daunting. And after teaching all day, going to a meeting would seem exhausting. So I would love to open it up via Zoom for just teachers so they could come pop in real quick, say something, celebrate their students, voice a concern, because that's the other thing we're missing at our school board meetings is now we don't have the kids to celebrate for STEM fair, for art
because
awards.
The meetings at 10.
Because they're during school day.
Okay. I'm still reeling from the retaliation retaliating against a teacher for speaking. I mean, this is the definition of dysfunction.
Yes.
You're going to have someone, Susan Chapman, actually, she was a city commissioner, and she was telling me, like, there had been research that the lack of conflict is evidence of dysfunction. A healthy system understands there will be conflict. People are going to disagree. And you find respectful ways to mediate, manage, you know, learn from each other. But the notion that our teachers are experiencing retaliation if they speak up, and that their actual, like, their whole assignment can change.
Yes.
Is disgusting to me. Like, that's just horrible.
Yes.
Okay, so at the school board level, because, I mean, I would, you know, within any, we've got an overall culture, but then we have a school, individual schools have a culture, and the principal's at the helm of that culture. It might be kind of tough for a school board member to influence the culture in a particular school. How would you do that?
So when I'm on the school board, I want to go to every single school we have in this county, not for photo ops, but to learn and to meet mm-hmm. staff and the administration.
Okay.
Our superintendent, when he first came, did a really great job working with elementary administrators with the third grade reading level. He mm-hmm. went in and made everything very, very transparent. He wanted to know exactly what was going on, how they were delivering, how they were using resources, yeah. and how they were measuring success. I want to work with administration, not as a boss, but peer-to-peer to figure out how can we best serve our teachers. They should be allowed to voice a concern.
Yeah.
Because they're with our kids every single day.
Yeah.
Why aren't we listening to them, right?
Uh-huh.
They, aren't they the experts here? They
sure.
they went to college for it. They yeah. get training for it. And if something's not working, I want to hear it from them.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to feel that they can't come to a school board member or come to a administrator. So I just want to go in, clear the air. We're on the same team. Let's mm-hmm. figure out how we can best serve our teachers. What do your teachers on this campus need? And how can I do that for you?
Okay. Tell me about academic excellence and accountability. You know, it's one of your priorities. I mean, I think everybody running for school board
sure.
wants, academic excellence. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer. But the accountability piece. So how do you measure that? How do you go about, as a school board member, creating that excellence?
Well, at our high school level specifically, we mm-hmm. see a lot of apathy for coming to school and attendance issues. So that's kind of where I want to focus on that accountability piece. Let's
okay.
get in with our administrators and figure out why are these kids not coming to school? What's going on at home? Do they need something? Are they hungry? Do they not have a ride?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's be humans about this and mm-hmm. really dig into why some of our kids are struggling. Let's find the ones that are falling through the cracks and figure out what's going on there. Do they need evaluation for services? Do they need mental health counseling?
Yeah.
Do they need a smaller setting? Let's really peel back what's going on underneath and help our most struggling students.
Yeah, that can be tough. The high school level, so much is going on
yes.
with kids. So getting back to, and because we're talking high school, you know, I think people have, you know, in terms of the culture of our schools and what some extremists have exploited, fears of parents that their kids are going to be indoctrinated, the conservative families being led to believe that their kids their values aren't going to be respected. What do you say to those folks about the value of public education, and how do you kind of turn the page and create a culture of inclusion that includes the conservative families, that where they feel comfortable and welcome?
Yeah, so the district's motto is every student, every day. Mm. And that's everybody, you know, not just some, everybody.
Yeah.
And I also want to make our conservative families know that we have laws in place for bathrooms. You must use the bathroom that is assigned to your gender. Mm-hmm. We have policies in place for calling students a certain name. If they want a nickname, the parent has to approve on it. So mm-hmm. I do really feel we've got policies in place that protect every learner and keep them safe and come to our schools.
Okay.
And also, as far as including everybody, I welcome people to take a tour of a high school campus and see the level of inclusion that that generation has for each other.
Yeah.
They don't see color. They don't see race, religion, gender identity. They're very inclusive. And I want to model my behavior after that generation.
Okay. Well, why don't we look at money now?
Yes.
You know, vouchers are taking a big bite out of public education in the state of Florida. It's very interesting to me that in the state of Texas, which is every bit as conservative as the state of Florida, and we could argue about that, I mean, because I do think the Republican Party has done quite a job at sort of putting voting requirements in place that have historically suppressed voters that aren't going to go with them. But let's just say Florida is a conservative state. Texas is too. And Texas consistently rejects vouchers. Texas has consistently said no to them because they actually have a very potent religious leadership that is saying, no, this is not a good idea. It doesn't actually line up with our values. I did an interview with a minister. I believe his name is Charles Johnson. I should have him on again. And, you know, he talks about how vouchers for private schools or private religious schools actually undermine education. They're not a good idea. But we got them. We got them now in Florida, and 2/3 of the parents that are using vouchers, their kids have never gone to public schools. They were footing the bill for private schools, and now they're getting $8,000 a piece for each child to defray the cost of the private school that they were paying for and could afford. So that's been a big drain, and I think a lot of people don't realize that. Like, We're handing public money to families whose kids were already in private school. That's 2/3 since the vouchers came online. Tell me about your thoughts of what you've seen with the budget challenges that Sarasota County has faced and will be facing. Tell me what you think of the solutions that have been brought forward and what can be done in the future to ensure that we have properly funded schools with this environment of universal vouchers.
So it's interesting to note that we saw this explosion of voucher money when the income cap was removed in 2023, meaning anybody in the state of Florida could access that voucher. A little history of the voucher started as the McKay Scholarship, and it had wonderful intentions. It was designed for students who were those quote-unquote falling through the cracks students, mm-hmm. or for students in underserved schools. They could have access to a private school.
Do you mean underperforming?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Underperforming school. Okay.
And for kids who are falling through the cracks, for example, a friend of mine, her son has dyscalculia, dysgraphia, dyslexia. He was really, really struggling in a traditional public school. Mm. They removed him. He went to a very small private school that focused solely on removing the gap of in his education for reading, for math, bringing up his scores, and it worked. And he's back in public education now. So that's really how that program is supposed to work. And with the private schools, you're right. Most of them who are taking that voucher were never, ever public school students. And it's also interesting to note that our private schools are raising their tuition because now they're actually telling parents, oh, you qualify for this scholarship. Here, fill this out. The money goes right to the school. They can raise their tuition because the parents are saying, oh, well, you know, I'm getting this voucher, so the tuition raise really isn't that bad. So now our private schools are profiting off of this voucher because they can raise their tuition prices.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, if you subsidize something, the price will go up. That's typically, that's actually a conservative argument against subsidies. So, but it didn't hold any water here in Florida. And it's interesting to me that we're funding education in this manner, but not requiring those who are getting the public money to be held to the same standards. So there are private schools that don't report their outcomes. There are private schools that aren't reporting how many kids wind up going to college. And I think it is a false sense of assurance or reassurance that, oh, my kid's in a private school. They're putting on a uniform. It's a certain class size. Maybe it's a certain demographic, you know, that makes me feel like somehow it's better. But the reality may be that the quality of the education isn't necessarily the same. And again, it goes to that slide that's seen in Florida between the elementary school scores and the high school scores. And I would love to see some accountability. You talk about academic excellence and accountability, that if you're getting public money, to the extent that the school board can be a voice or can, I don't know what kind of standards, it may be more of a state situation, but just say, listen, you know, if you're going to get this funding, you should be providing comparable services. And the reality is it's not easy. This is tough work, educating. It's been very distressing to me to watch the maligning and smearing of public education by people who I think are simply doing it to score political points. And the fallout is our kids and their education is impacted, and those children don't get those years back. They're pivotal years. So to use kids as guinea pigs for political experiments, it is a real tough one. And we've, you know, in Sarasota County, I think we've been at the center of a lot of that. Certainly, at least one of the co-founders of Moms for Liberty is one of our own school board members.
Yes.
So, all right, so hard for me to not talk about that because, you know, education, I think like a lot of families, I grew up, my parents were just like, you have to study, you have to do good in school and all of that. So, Megan, we have to wrap it up soon. What are you hearing from your campaigning, your meeting people? What are you hearing from parents or non-parents? You know, I mean, my kids are adults now, but I care about public education. So what are you hearing out there from voters?
And I think it's interesting you bring that up about people who don't have kids currently in our schools, whether their kids have graduated or they never had schools, because we have a lot of retirees in our county. And after the Mike Moran situation, so many retirees came up to me and said, that's my money, and I voted for it to go to the school, and I want it to go to the school.
Yeah.
I don't want it to go to the tax collector office.
Yeah.
And the same with the vouchers. A lot of retirees and parents are saying that too.
Yeah, we need to tell people in case they may not be aware, the tax collector Mike Moran started charging a quote unquote commission on the extra mill for school funding, claiming that it was to defray the expense his office incurred for collecting the money. And he claimed that there was something in the law that allowed him to do it, notwithstanding the fact that for 23 years there were no fees collected. And they actually went to the county commission saying, oh, you need to vote so you don't have to collect fees anymore, which was incredibly duplicitous because the county commission had never paid those fees. So you're hearing people commenting on that. That was incredible, egregious. Yeah. So those are the retirees' parents. What else?
But yes, parents, especially those who have their kids in public education, are coming to me and asking, how can we keep some of the personnel, like our behavior specialists and our mental health counselors? What can we do to keep these positions at our schools? And at the end of the day, the answer is always money.
Sure.
However, I want to give people hope. We are advocating, and the more that we stand together and advocate at our state level, the more noise we make. So many articles are coming out right now about why districts are pushing back about the voucher program. And let me be very clear, there are some kids that will absolutely benefit. We don't want to get rid of the program. We want an income cap put back on. Accountability, meaning the students need to be assigned an ID number so we know exactly where that money is going.
Because there's a lot of unaccounted
money, right? Yeah. On any given day, the state can account for about 30,000 students where they're going with that voucher.
That's amazing.
And then also, some students might start, let's say, a homeschool or a private school or a private charter school, and go about half of the quarter and decide this isn't the right fit for me and go back to public school. Well, the data is showing sometimes we're not seeing that money come back to the school for 18 months. So essentially that student's being educated for free.
Wow. Okay. So there are some real world concrete fixes that could be put in place to really make this program a lot more practical.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. How do people meet you, find out more about your campaign? Do you have a website? Tell us about that.
Yes. So if you go to meganforsarasota.com, you can see my website. I also have social media, Facebook and Instagram, which is Elect Megan Tinneman. And I always like to remind people my last name rhymes with cinnamon. It makes it a lot easier to pronounce.
Okay.
And on those pages, we talk about how you can help. So I love to do meet and greets. I can meet at I've done many at a park with parents while their kids play in people's houses. We sometimes do it for coffee. You know, anytime I can talk to somebody, I love that.
So if people invite you to do that,
yes,
you'll do that. Okay. All right. Well, I thank you so much, Megan, for joining me. And I want to remind everyone, so this WSLR News is presenting a forum featuring the District 1 candidates for Sarasota County School Board on Tuesday, May 26th. That's next Tuesday at 6 p.m. at Fogartyville. Attendees will hear from Heidi Brandt, Teresa DeWitt, and Jimmy Glover, who are vying for the seat currently held by Bridget Ziegler. The forum will be moderated by WSLR News Director Johannes Werner and Talk of the Town host and independent journalist Carrie Seidman. Take this opportunity to familiarize yourselves with the candidates before voting on August 18th. For more information and reservations for the May 26th candidate forum, visit WSLR.org or call 941-894-6469. And we do recommend reservations. They help us out a lot, and it's a great opportunity. I'm sure there'll be one for the District 4 candidates for your race, Megan. So, Megan Tinneman, I thank you so much for joining me, for running. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day. My love.